This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Borg, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. During the next hour, we're focusing on two of the three Republican candidates campaigning to be the party's nominee for governor. We're talking first with former Governor Terry Branstad about his comeback campaign, and then Bob Vanderplaats about his third try at moving into the governor's mansion. Incidentally, the third candidate, Rod Roberts, is our guest tomorrow. Today, it's insights on the Branstad and Vanderplaats campaigns, right after the NPR news. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dean Borg, in for Ben Kiefer. With less than a week to go before Tuesday's primary election, the three Iowa Republican gubernatorial candidates are traveling across the state, meeting with voters in the final campaign push for the right to face Governor Chet Colver in the November election. Today on our program, a conversation with two of the three GOP candidates. Later in the hour, I'm talking with Bob Vanderplaats, the Sioux City businessman, making a third run for Iowa governor. Tomorrow on the program, a conversation with a third Republican candidate, Rod Roberts. He's a state representative from Carroll. But first, a conversation with former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. Branstad served as the state's chief executive officer from 1983 to 1999, the longest-serving governor in Iowa's history. He's widely seen now as the front-runner for the GOP nomination and leads in aggregate polling against incumbent Governor Chet Colver. In these final days, what's your campaign priority? Is there anything that is undone that you consider essential to complete before next Tuesday, or would you just assume the election were tomorrow?
Well, no, we need to identify and get our voters out, so we're working very hard at that. We're very pleased with the progress we're making. A lot of Republicans are voting by absentee ballot more than ever before. That's encouraging. And, of course, I'm making a lot of stops and a lot of town hall meetings all over the state. We're visiting literally every county and every college and university in the state in this campaign, and we're getting a great response. So I'm very encouraged about the way it's going. In fact, the fact that Culver's cronies are attacking me with this 527, I think is an indication that they see me as the strongest Republican candidate and the biggest threat. And so they have unleashed a barrage of nasty, negative ads and misleading distortions of my record. But this is all being done by a group that won't even identify who their contributors are.
Do you think that that might encourage people to turn out?
I think it will. We're seeing that among our supporters. We're getting a lot of calls here in the office that are really upset about this nasty, negative campaign and a group of liberal Democrats headed by Rob Tully, who's a former chair of the Democratic Party, a candidate for Congress, a contributor to Culver, who is actually masquerading as conservative Republicans. And I think people are angry about that. This is a new low in Iowa politics, and it is just not right. We as candidates have to make a full disclosure of all contributions and all expenditures, and this group is refusing to identify who the contributors are. We suspect they're out-of-state liberals.
But, Mr. Branstad, I can see it has your dander up. And
yeah, but, you know, the neat thing about it is I think Iowans have a sense of fairness, and I think Iowans really see this as something that is not fair and not right, and we want to expose it for what it is. But we're not letting it distract us from our positive campaign to lead an Iowa comeback. And my goal is to bring 200,000 more jobs to Iowa, raise family incomes by 25%, restore our leadership position in education, and reduce the size and cost of government by 15% over the next 4 to 5 years so we can be a growing, prosperous state again.
I'm glad you brought up that 200,000 jobs. You've said that from the very start of the campaign. One of your goals, promises, to create 200,000 jobs. Where in the world do you get that figure? What substance does it have? And over what period of time are these 200,000 jobs going to be created? It just sounds like a number that someone pulled out of the air.
Well, now we looked at the number of people unemployed today, which is 114,000. Then we look at the number of people that are going to be completing their education over the next 4 or 5 years. And so this is something we want to accomplish over the next 5 years, is 200,000 jobs. And it is an ambitious goal, but, you know, I was governor back during the 80s when we were in dire straits, and we set ambitious goals there, and we were successful in reducing the unemployment rate from 8.5% when I took office to 2.5% when I left office. We had a record number of people employed. We did a lot of things like getting rid of the tax on machinery and equipment to attract industry and business and jobs to Iowa. We need to do that again.
Where do you see the most promising area to create those jobs? And I know during your tenure, you helped create in the Iowa Development Commission, I think it was called at that time, or now it's called the Iowa Department of Economic Development.
Yeah. Actually, we changed the name while I was governor.
That's right.
And we put the focus there. We had people like Jack Bailey and Alan Tomes and Dave Lyons that did a great job, and I worked directly with them.
Well, what I was going to say is that during that time, a priority was attracting the insurance industry to Iowa,
exactly.
And that was highly successful. Now, where do you see these 200,000 jobs that you're predicting over the next 5 years if you're elected? Where do you see the fertile areas to create those jobs?
Insurance and financial services continue to be areas of great opportunity. Another area is renewable energy. Iowa is a leader, and we started that back when I was governor before. Ethanol, biodiesel, wind energy, there's great opportunities there. I think we can see a comeback in manufacturing, too. And the other thing that I'm concerned about is commercial businesses. Our commercial property tax rates are so high that it really hurts us when we're trying to attract entrepreneurs and commercial businesses to our state. So I want to reduce the commercial property tax from 100% of market value to like 60 or 65% for the new, and then phase down the existing commercial property taxes to that level too, to be more competitive. Right now, our commercial property taxes are among the highest in the country. And so what businesses, what communities have to do if they want to attract a commercial business, they have to give massive tax abatements or use tax increment financing.
You're very familiar with rural Iowa. You had a law office,
right,
and a partnership in Lake Mills in Winnebago County, and I think you're a graduate of the Forest City area, a high school. So you understand the difficult situation that rural Iowa is in right now. What is the potential for rural Iowa, and what do you intend to do as governor to improve things?
Well, first of all, I think there's some real potential because of the whole concern about reducing our dependency on foreign oil and using renewable energy. And we've already seen a lot of ethanol and biodiesel plants built in Iowa. We need that federal tax credit extended for biodiesel. That's critically important, and for ethanol as well. But we need to do what we can at the state level also to make Iowa a continued positive environment for that. Wind energy is another area of great growth, and if you travel in northern and western Iowa, you see all kind of wind generators. We have now surpassed California. We're number two in generation of wind energy, and also plants that make the blades and the other things that go into.
But have we just about exhausted that?
I don't think so. I think there's still more potential for that, and Iowa is a leader in that, and I think there's a lot of potential there. I think there's also opportunity for us in other business areas as well. If we reduce the burden, make Iowa more competitive, market Iowa as a right-to-work state, and stop all these job-killing labor proposals like prevailing wage, repeal of the right to work, elimination of federal deductibility. These are things that drive business and jobs out of the state, and those are things that I will not consider. Instead, I will look at reducing the tax burden and expediting the permitting process to help companies that are looking at building in Iowa to be able to have a predictable time frame when they can get their permits.
Mr. Branstad, some are saying that this Republican primary to choose a candidate for governor is really a struggle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party, partly because Mr. van der Plas is being supported by strongly conservative, well-organized activists within the Republican Party. How do you gauge the political heat of that struggle?
Well, I'm very encouraged about the broad base of support that I'm receiving from within the Republican Party. I've always been an honest conservative, and I'm proud of the record that I've had at pro-life and pro-family, and I signed the Defense of Marriage Act, and I think I have a realistic viewpoint of what is possible, and I think Republicans are looking for somebody that has a proven track record and will get things done and reduce the size and cost of government. But I think also they want somebody that can appeal to independents and be able to defeat Chet Culver. And I have a proven track record of having won 10 contested elections, and the 11th one is coming up on Tuesday, the 8th of June, and we feel confident about winning that one, and then even more confident about going on to replace Chet Culver, because he's got the state in the worst financial fix we've been in. He has not chosen good people to run and manage the agencies and departments of state government. People are looking for experienced, competent leadership, and they want openness and honesty in government, and I did that before, and I will do that again.
Mr. Branstad, but what I hear you saying when you say that you have a broad base of support and that you can attract independents, that to me is code word for saying Mr. van der Plas, particularly being very ultra-conservative and running on that philosophy, is that in attracting the independents, you are better able to run against Culver.
And I think if you look at the opinion surveys, I consistently have beaten Culver in every survey that's been taken since I left my job as the president of Des Moines University. That is not true of van der Plas. And the other thing is, I think as people look at my record and my approach is, I have always been inclusive and work to try to build coalitions and get things accomplished. And right now, with the financial problems the state's facing, people are looking with somebody with experience to fix the problem. And I have the experience, and I think I have the leadership ability proven at Des Moines University as well as governor before.
Coming up, more of my conversation with former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. Later in the hour, I'm talking with Bob van der Plas, the Sioux City businessman, making his third run for Iowa's executive branch. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Let's get back to my conversation with former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. Am I right in saying that you believe that you're more middle mainstream than is Mr. van der Plas?
Well, I wouldn't use terms like that. I would just say I believe that I have the experience, and I think I have the proven record of getting things done and choosing the right people to lead. And I guess, you know, I've always tried to abide by Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, so I'm not going to say anything negative about any of the other candidates. But I just believe that right now, with the problems the state of Iowa is facing, we have an inexperienced governor that's driven the state deeply into debt. We need somebody that has a proven record of resolving problems, and I guess reforming the budgeting process. We did that in 92, and I enforced it, the 99% spending limitations. Culver has violated that. He and the legislature 133 times in the last 4 years have not withstood the 99% spending limits and spent more than that, and consequently driven the state into deep trouble.
I know,
and then used one-time money for ongoing expenses, which is Any CPA can tell you that's not what you should be doing.
I know.
That's why the state auditor, David Vaught, has endorsed my candidacy.
I know you want to run against Chet Culver, and that's why you're saying that right now. But right now you're running against Rod Roberts and Bob Vanderplaats, and we've talked about Mr. Vanderplaats. What about Rod Roberts? Why are you a better candidate than Rod Roberts?
Rod's a real nice guy, and he's served for 10 years representing Carroll in the legislature. But I just think he doesn't have the experience that I have of having been the chief executive, having run a university, having balanced the budget every year and made those tough decisions and chosen a team of leaders. But Rod's a really nice guy, and I certainly like him. But I just think that when people look for who do you want at this critical time in our state's history, I have the experience and the leadership ability that Iowa needs.
You mentioned visiting college campuses. Is that a change in the way that you are campaigning now? That is, when you first started running for political office back in the 1970s, I think, for the Iowa legislature, were you visiting college campuses at that time?
Well, actually, I was a college student at that time. I actually was in law school when I ran for the legislature the first time in 72. And I commuted from up north of Leland, Iowa. I lived on a farm north of Leland. That was before I moved to rural Lake Mills. And I actually took 10 hours in law school and ran for the legislature at the same time. And we were actually raising pigs and hay houses out on the farm. So, I was a law student at that time. In fact, I chose the blue and white colors, which were Drake's colors, as my campaign colors, and have just stayed with it.
That's interesting to know. That's all that color.
That's the history of the blue and white Branstad colors. Is that was because I was a Drake law student, and those were the Drake colors, and I just stayed with it, and it's served me well through 10 contested elections.
What's your message to young voters?
Well, the message is that we need.
I mean,
need
some of them
leader.
Weren't even born when you started your political career.
I know, but the key, I think, for young voters is they want somebody that's going to create jobs and provide an environment, quality education and good jobs so that they can get a great education and stay in Iowa and have a good place to raise a family and make a good living.
What issue do you think Iowans are overlooking as you get out and talk with them? What do you wish were better understood about your vision for this state?
Well, I think, obviously, part of the problem is that we have to combat the distortions that are put out by those people that will just pull something out of context and then not tell people the whole story. I think Paul Harvey used to say it, and here's the rest of the story. So I think as people look at my record and experience, I just want them to look at the whole thing and not somebody. It's so easy for people to make some accusation and not look at the whole picture. I'm very proud of what we've accomplished. I came in as governor during the farm crisis of the 80s, one of the most difficult times in Iowa history, and I led Iowa to a time in the 90s of growth and prosperity. I left the state with reduced taxes and a balanced budget and a $900 million surplus, and I guess that just shows that if you have consistent conservative management over a period of time and you stay focused on the things that are important, like education and economic development, and you manage things in a fiscally conservative way and you keep things on a pay-as-you-go system, great things can happen. Our present governor doesn't understand that and I guess isn't willing to make those tight of tough decisions. And as a result, the state's in a real mess. And that's why thousands of people came to me and asked me to run for governor again. And I'm excited about the opportunity to lead an economic comeback all across the state.
You've never run against an incumbent before, have you?
I haven't. And, you know, the last time an incumbent governor lost in Iowa was 1962, and the governor was Norman Irby, who lost to Harold Hughes. Now, Norman Irby was from Boone, and I now live in a log home in rural Boone. So this is going to be Boone County's revenge.
How has campaigning changed since you first began talking with voters back in the 1970s?
Well, personal campaigning is still very important, and I enjoy that. But technology has changed so dramatically with the computers and the internet and now social networking, blogs and Twitter and Facebook and all of this stuff.
Are you reaching people that way, though? Do you think that's as effective? I know you
yes.
like the style of campaigning of getting out and looking people in the eye and shaking their hands.
I think you need to do both. I think today you need to do both. You need to do the personal campaigning. I enjoy that. But Tim Albrecht is my communications director, and he's helped me a great deal to communicate through the new technology and social networking. And I'm enjoying learning that, and I have the BlackBerry with me at all times, and I stay in touch with people that way as well.
You know, Democrats are in firm control of the legislature. It's unlikely that even if Republicans cut into that majority in the November elections, that Republicans won't control the legislature. And if you're elected governor and
respectfully disagree with that analysis, Dean. I believe this year there is a tremendous feeling that the Democrats at the national and state level have let the people down, that they have run up this huge national debt. They've got the state in a real financial fix. I think there's a good opportunity for Republicans to win control of at least one house, maybe both houses of the legislature, not only win the governorship, but offices we haven't held for a long time, the attorney general's office. In fact, our candidate for attorney general has raised 8 times as much money as the incumbent. We've got great candidates for state treasurer and secretary of state. I would not be surprised to see the voters say, we are not happy with the mismanagement and we want new leadership. And I think there's an opportunity for Republicans to do extraordinarily well in 2010. If you look out at the people that have requested absentee ballots so far in this primary, 23,000 Republicans and about 9,000 Democrats have requested absentee ballots. That's a total reversal of what we've seen in recent elections. I see this, and I've run, as I said many times before, as a year when Republicans have a great opportunity to make a dramatic comeback, and not only in the governor's office, but the other state offices and the legislature.
You were governor for 16 years, 4 terms. What's your long-range plan for your own political career? One more term?
Well, I don't want to make a decision on that at this point in time. I guess my feeling is I'm running for governor now to correct the mess that Culver's created, and that is going to be my mission. I want to put a strong team together to accomplish that, and I have no other ambitions beyond that in terms of running for any other higher office or national office. I love the state of Iowa. I want to straighten out the mess that we're in, and we don't want to look beyond that, I guess, at this point in time.
Right now, you're looking down the campaign trail over the few more days. Thanks so much for spending time with us.
Well, you're welcome, Dean.
Former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, who I spoke with earlier today. Coming next, a conversation with Bob Vanderplaats, a Sioux City businessman making his third run for Iowa governor. In 2002, he lost to Doug Gross in the Republican primary, and 4 years ago, he dropped out of the governor's race and ran for lieutenant governor on the ticket with Jim Nussel. And tomorrow on this program, a conversation with a third Republican candidate, Rod Roberts. He's a state representative from Carroll. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Board continuing the exchange now, and we're going to be talking with Bob Vanderplaats, Sioux City businessman who's in the race for the Republican nomination for governor of Iowa. Mr. Vanderplaats, hello.
Hey, Dean, good to hear from you and glad to be on your program.
Tell me where you are right now.
Right now I'm in Newton, Iowa. We started out today in Grinnell, and then to Newton, and then back to the Amanas, and then to Pella, and then back to Des Moines. So we have a full day yet.
I'm curious, in all this crisscrossing the state, do you do a lot of flying or is it driving?
We really do both, and it just depends kind of on the day. Yesterday, we were planning on probably flying, but because of the thunderstorms, we couldn't fly, mm-hmm. So we drove. Today, everything's in pretty close proximity, so we're driving. But then, of course, on Friday and Saturday and Sunday and Monday, I think we're flying the rest of the way. So it just depends on the schedule. And Sioux City to Burlington's a long ways away, so sometimes we fly then.
Well, there's a lot to do. Less than a week to go now before the Republican primary. And I say there's a lot to do. What your appraisal of that? What's your campaign priority in these final days? Is there anything that's undone that you consider essential to complete, or would you just assume the election were tomorrow?
No, I want the election to be Tuesday, June 8th. Our whole voter turnout model, getting everybody out to the polls, is all focused on June 8th, plus doing the absentee ballot program that we have. As you well know, Dean, we have Chuck Norris coming into Davenport and Cedar Rapids on June 4th. And then on
Chuck Norris is the activist from the very conservative part of the Republican Party, and also actor Chuck Norris.
Right. And so he'll be in Davenport and Cedar Rapids on Friday, June 4th, and then he'll be in West Des Moines, Council Bluffs, and Hinton High School on Saturday, June 5th. So that's another part of our strategy to really turn out the vote, in particular in those areas, which I think is going to be a great boost to our campaign. And I believe, Dean, everything's setting up right now just as we had planned. I think we're going to be successful on June 8th.
But you have some momentum to counteract. Now, you've said you're turning out the vote and things are going just the way that you want. But considering the most recent polling, you're running behind Mr. Branstad. Over the weekend, newspaper endorsements didn't go your way. Now, how do you counter that Branstad momentum to keep the nomination from slipping away? Is it turnout?
Well, it is turnout. And first of all, I wouldn't call it Branstad momentum, because when you slip in the polls as he has, he's now under 50%. He's well under 50%. Our numbers have only increased. We have internal polling that show that this race is much, much closer. And I think, as you even saw with the Des Moines Register Sunday article, this is going to be a battleground between who wins the soul of the GOP. Our people are coming out to vote. They're tired of politics as usual. They want principled conservatives that believe in the Constitution, but yet have a compelling vision for Iowa.
Let's go back to that battle for the soul of the Republican Party in Iowa. Why do you say that?
Well, I didn't say it. It was the Des Moines Register
But you're subscribing to it by quoting it.
Well, yeah, because I think what it is, you're seeing it all across the country, is, and that's why you have the Tea Party movement. You have individuals who've never been involved in politics before, we're saying, we're going to take a stake in this election. And overwhelmingly, those people are endorsing our campaign. I believe they're going to come out to vote. I believe they're going to take their friends and their neighbors out to vote. I think that's an element that these polls, the one that shows Branstad at 46 and me at 31, I think they're missing that element because these just aren't Republican voters. I think these are people who are going to vote in a Republican primary. But I believe what it is, people want leadership today from the outside, not from the inside. They're tired of politics as usual. That's why I think we'll do well.
But if you don't win this nomination, and that's still up for grabs, I'll give you that. But is that a rejection, given the stake that you're putting in it? Is that a rejection of what you consider to be the heart and soul conservative values of the Republican Party?
No, I don't think it is. And the reason I don't think it is, Dean, is regardless of the outcome of Tuesday, June 8th, our campaign is going to have a significant portion of that primary. I believe if we don't win the majority of the votes or be the top vote getter out of the three-way primary, we will be very, very close to a close second. And so we're going to have a vast majority at stake on that Tuesday. I think our cause will be well represented. I don't think people are going to go away here. I think they're going to stay in this fight, the fight for freedom and to basically take their country and their state back.
Okay, let's say it is a very close second. Does that mean, I've previously heard you say, because I've asked you the question, what about a third party, and you just summarily rejected that? You said, no third party. But if it is really close, would you give it a second thought?
You know, I really don't want to even think about that right now, Dean, because we're 6 days away from a primary. Our whole focus is on winning the Republican primary. I think it'd be good for our party if we won. I obviously believe it'd be very, very good for our chances to take back Terrace Hill and the governor's seat if we won. So that's our entire focus, is mm-hmm. building up our team. Last night, we were in Ottumwa, and we had over 200 people in a thunderstorm coming out to our campaign rally in Ottumwa. And Ottumwa is typically a Democrat community, but we had Republicans, Independents, Tea Party, Democrat people attending, all leaving with yard signs, all signing up for our campaign because they want real-life leadership. Our online donations are at record highs right now, people donating online. I think we have a great momentum. As that poll indicated, if you read the synopsis of the poll, it says it's clear that the momentum is behind the Vanderplaats campaign.
Let's go back to the momentum and the fact that you said it's a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. Given those two things, why are you a better choice than Terry Branstad if this is a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party?
Well, first of all, I think two things. One is the environment that we're in. People don't want career politicians. They're not looking for a 20-year governor today. I really don't believe that. And I think my background of having real-life leadership experience in education, healthcare, human services, business, and industry will serve me very well. But I also don't have that political record of growing government, increasing taxes and fees, things that would be not congruent with the Republican Party. We'd like to see government, that we would shrink government, that we would reduce taxes, that we would appoint lieutenant governors that agree with our principled stands on life and on marriage. I mean, those are things I think people are saying, this is a defining line and a defining moment, and I'm looking forward to taking that vote on June 8th.
Isn't that kind of cut you out, though, of attracting the independent vote, Mr. Vanderplaats?
Oh, absolutely not. Because I think the first test of anybody who's going to hire somebody for a leadership position is, can I trust you? And even if people don't agree with me on all the issues, they can trust me on where I stand on life, where I stand on marriage, where I stand on the Constitution, the separation of powers. But then I think they look back at my record, my background and experience of being in public education for 11 years, being a CEO that served people with brain injury, spinal cord injury, kids with disabilities, and also being in business and industry today. I believe that what the voters are going to say, we entrust Vanderplaats, and we like his background, experience, and his vision for the future of Iowa to truly open up this state for business and provide world-class education.
I mentioned Mr. Branstad. What about Mr. Roberts? Why are you a better choice than Mr. Roberts?
Well, you know, I happen to like Rod. I happen to believe this race is down between Branstad and myself, and all the polling would indicate that, and all the political pundits would indicate that. So to me, if people want Governor Branstad, they should either vote for Governor Branstad or for Mr. Roberts. If they want a choice beyond Governor Branstad, I think they need to come our way. So Rod's a very good guy. I like him. I've liked him on the campaign trail. He's been in the legislature for 10 years. Again, I don't think that serves him well today in this environment. I don't think people are looking for politicians and political experience. I think they're looking for real-life leadership, and that's why I believe this environment is tailor-made for a Vanderplaats candidacy.
You know, you're portraying yourself as an outsider. You've done it here already in our conversation here. And in a year in which voters seem to be wary of incumbents, and even on your website, I was checking that out, and there's a line on there that says that you've run for office but never been elected. You know, ordinarily people would shy away from a record like that, but you tout it. Isn't that, however, working against you when such groups as the Iowa Taxpayers Association and the current state auditor, Dave Vaught, endorse Mr. Branstad because what they see in his record? Aren't you asking Republicans to buy into a lot of blue sky?
No, I don't think so. And the reason I don't think so, Dean, is first of all, the former state auditor, Dick Johnson, who served under Terry Branstad, endorses my campaign. He's the co-chair of my campaign. State Representative and Brigadier General Jody Timison is the state chair of our campaign. She endorses our campaign. So I don't think it's blue sky. I think what it is real-life leadership. I think what you're seeing maybe with some of the other endorsements are probably more politics as usual again. Well, we're saying in business and industry, we don't play the smoke and mirror games. We confront the brutal facts up front. And when we confront the brutal facts, whether it be two sets of books, increasing the sales tax not once but twice, increasing fees over 30 times, increasing the state budget 2.5 times while your population stays stagnant, that those are real issues that we need to address. And I just happen to believe that Iowans are going to reject that record on June 8th. And if they don't reject the record on June 8th, my fear is they'll reject that record on November 2.
I want to go back to that run for office but never been elected line that's on your website. You know, it seems that I said blue sky before, but never having been elected, why did you start at the very top? Why did you run for governor right out of the box?
You know, that's a great question, Dean. It's kind of ironic that you would ask that because my chief opponent in this race is the one who encouraged me to run for the top spot immediately in 2002, Terry Branstad. I chaired the governor's council for Governor Branstad in his last term, and he saw my background, he saw my experience, he saw my leadership ability. He thought, and because I didn't have a political record, as I mentioned in the Des Moines Register debate, that I'd be a great candidate to unseat an incumbent Democrat governor. And I happen to believe in 02, where we lost by 1,500 votes. 06, I was lieutenant governor nominee of Jim Nussel. 2008, I was a state chair of Mike Huckabee's campaign, where we won Iowa by 9 percentage points. In 2010, I just happen to believe I'm ready, I'm seasoned, I've been here. I think this is our time, and I think we've been prepared for such a time as this, and I look forward to bringing it to a close.
Pretty good chance that the Democrats, who are strongly in control of the Iowa legislature right now, are going to, even in the worst scenario, probably at least hold on to one house in the Iowa legislature. What makes you think that as a very conservative, and in fact, I'm not saying that, you're citing that in your credentials, what makes you think that you can work effectively with at least one house Democratic?
Well, I think two things. One is, again, as I'll go back to, one is I guarantee if a legislature, Democrat or Republican, they will be able to trust me. They'll know where I stand. I'm not going to waffle. I'm not going to straddle a fence.
They may be able to trust you, but will they like what you're espousing?
I think they will because whether it's Senator Gronstall or whether it's Representative Pat Murphy, my guess is they want world-class education. And I happen to believe we've tried the big bureaucracy approach. It only has allowed our student achievement to fall through the floor and teachers to be frustrated. I've been in education. That's why we have a lot of educators endorsing our campaign. I think they'll want to have leadership to really provide world-class education. I think they'll want to open up Iowa for business. I've been in business and industry. I know what it takes. I taught economics, studied economics. We've tried this thing again of government picking winners and losers. Hasn't worked. We still rank 49th in the country in new business startups. But the other part of it is, Dean, I'm not going to stay in Des Moines. I don't want to be a governor that stays in Des Moines and Terrace Hill and up the state capitol. I want to go to Iowa City. I want to go to Mason City, and I want to go to Sioux City and to Council Bluffs and sell the vision to the people of Iowa. They then can put their insight into their elected officials, and I believe their elected officials then will vote for our agenda, and that's how you move and you advance a principled conservative agenda that is right for the future of Iowa so we can grow this economy and keep our kids here and welcome those who have left Iowa back to Iowa or anyone who wants to be in Iowa to be in Iowa.
Quite a lot's being said today, Mr. Vonderplatz, about the negative advertising that ostensibly is being circulated, headed by a group that's being directed by former Democratic State Chair Rob Tully. But all of those mailings and TV ads are directed against former Governor Branstad. Doesn't that leave you somewhat feeling left out? Because the advertising is no doubt also energizing Republicans to spite the Democratic attacks by supporting Branstad, who's being attacked. Isn't that making your job even more difficult?
No, it's making my job a lot easier.
Why is that?
Because the record that they're going after Whether they can be upset about it or not, the fact is it's footnoted, it's researched, and for the most part, what I can tell, it's factual. And so when you say that it's energizing Republicans around Branstad, that's totally a false statement, Dean. His numbers are falling in the polls. Our numbers are increasing in the polls. They're rallying around our campaign. And so if the Democrats want to expose his record in the primary, that's totally up to them.
Are you saying, Mr. Vandelplatz, more power to him? It's working my advantage.
Well, it's not so much working to my advantage, but I think what it's doing, it's laying out the playbook that we've said all along, that what they're going to do against someone with a political record. I saw this done when I was lieutenant governor nominee with Jim Nussel, where Chuck Colver and the Democrats went relentlessly after Jim Nussel's 16-year record in Washington, D.C. What you're seeing today is that the Democrats, headed up by Rob Toley in this Iowans for a Responsible Government, they're going relentlessly after Terry Branstad's record right away. And I think they're not going to let up. I think if they're right that they put about $500,000 into ads already, I think they'll put $5 million worth of ads exposing that record in a general election.
Does the anonymity of the source of the financing for those ads at all bother you?
Yeah, that it does. I've always been about, let's have clean and open financial records, disclosure forms that clearly designate where is the money coming from. And I believe they should have been held to the same standard that each one of us candidates are held to when we did our reports on January 19, on May 19. Our next one is due, I believe, this Friday on June 4, that they should have to expose their revenue receipts as well as their expenditure receipts so we can really see who's behind this group. The anonymity in any election bothers me.
I'm going to go to two different areas of the education spectrum, first starting out with preschool. You're on the record saying that you want to either phase out or do away immediately with the current state financing of preschool and the public schools. What are you going to do with the families who are already enrolled with their children or planning to enroll, or public schools that have already invested in preschool with that state support? How are you going to get that done, and why would you do it?
Well, two things there, Dean. First of all, being an educator, I fully understand from birth to 5 years old how important those formative years are. But I believe the research will also bear out the most important person in that formative year development is a parent, either a mom or a dad. So let's grow this economy so moms and dads can have that choice to stay home and raise the child and educate the child in the formative years.
You advocate homeschooling then?
What? No. We're talking about preschool.
I know. I know.
But you bet. I also believe in a parental's right in education, whether it be homeschool or private school or their choice of public school. I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, philosophically, is that we already have moms and dads with preschool, private preschools, nonprofit preschools, church-run preschools, and we do have some assistance available through Head Start and empowerment dollars for those children who can't afford preschool. But the other part of it, Dean, is we also have to ask ourselves, what can we afford, what can't we afford? If we put $110 million into universal preschool, do we take that away from the University of Iowa? Do we take that away from our community colleges or K-12 education when we're already cutting teachers? It was the education community that was really telling me initially when they started this universal preschool process, don't do it because as soon as you implement it, other parts of the education system are going to have to suffer. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, Dean, you go to the end of third grade and you look at the research, and the research can't indicate which children had preschool, which children didn't have preschool. So we have to ask ourselves, do we want to invest $110 million for universal preschool when it'd be best for parents to be engaged right away? And I'd say let's grow this economy so moms and dads can have good jobs and stay invested in their child's education birth to five and beyond.
Just a quick wind-up question here. This is the third try for governor for you. One of those attempts was amended, as you said, to run for lieutenant governor, but you nestled. You've been investing the better part of a decade now in going after this dream. If things don't work your way next Tuesday, what happens to that passion driving you? Are you feeling strongly enough to be out campaigning for the Republican nominee?
You know what? I feel really good about it. First of all, our chances on June 8th. To me, as I've told everybody, perseverance in my house is a virtue. It's a trait. I think something that we should recognize as a virtue and a trait in society. But in order to persevere at something, you have to believe in it very, very deeply. And I've believed that this state has needed leadership for a long time. I've persevered in it. I think the voters are going to reward me on June 8th. If for whatever reason they don't reward me with a victory on June 8th, I will still passionately pursue these issues that I believe are so important to the state of Iowa if we're going to grow a vibrant economy, deliver world-class education, and shrink government, and still hold on to what our Constitution says and what our powers are within that Constitution.
Mr. Von der Plaats, I'll let you get back on the campaign trail. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye.
The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins. We had production assistance from Christina Sarnelli. Dennis Reese gives technical support, podcasting, and on-demand audio from The Exchange available by going to our website at iowapublicradio.org. And we welcome your comments and questions. Write to us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Theme music by Dan Knight. And The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.